Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
Michael Godot, and it's a very important show because a friend. How long have we been friends, Bobby?
Well, it's very funny you mention that. Of course, Bobby Slayton, our friend, the Pitbull of comedy. You've seen him all over the place. BobbySlayton.com, of course, but in Ed Wood, Get Shorty. Dreamgirls is coming out this winter with Jamie Foxx and Eddie Murphy. I've seen him on Showtime, HBO, The Tonight Show. Of course, he was in the Rat Pack. A long time, Penn.
Here he is, Bobby Slayton.
You know, see, I've done a lot of little things. You've done one giant thing, became a big star. I've been dabbling, and you know, I've done about 15.
You don't dabble. You're a pro.
Well, I've done about 15 movies, and I once added up all the time in all the films. I think it's like 9 minutes. I think the Rat Pack, where I played Joey Bishop, was my biggest part. I think it was in the movie maybe for 7-8 minutes, even though it was a 2-hour film. So you've just managed to make one giant splash as a part of the big team, and I've just tried to just inch my way to the top, and it's been brutal and fruitless. But anyway, so it's great to be here, you know, and it's great. I just drove out from L.A., and, you know, it was a 4-hour drive, and you know, I left you a message on your answering machine. You know, I get that road rage, and I'll tell you right now, I had plenty of time to get here. I left at 7 o'clock this morning so I could be here. I had extra time. I stop for coffee, and yet I still get so mad when there are people doing 55 or 65 miles an hour in the left lane and the diamond lane. And, you know, and as you know, it's you have to go really fast. It doesn't mean you have 9 children and a lawnmower, Paco. Get out of my way. I want you to die. And I'll tell you something else. I think it might be your affiliate on one of your stations, Adam Carolla in L.A.
Yeah,
I think it's on one of your stations.
On Free FM.
Yeah, Adam a few weeks ago, was a big, big thing in the news about how, I guess he used an Asian slur on the radio.
Yeah.
And the Chinese Defamation League or the Asian Defense League, whatever they are. And it's not even worth repeating, but I will say something right now. I'm not trying to get you the press that Adam got, but Asian people, and it's just a fact, can't drive, period, end of story. They're great people. I love their food. I love their dry cleaning. I love their massages. They're great with the karate, but the driving is not one of their... You might as well just have blind people drive with seeing eye dogs running alongside the car. Asians can't drive. That's not Penn Jillette. It's me. As a matter of fact, don't even bother me. Call Adam Carolla. Give him crap. The Asians already hate him, so give him crap.
So your daughter's an actress now.
Yeah, my daughter, oh my God, she's... you know, it's so funny because I was never into the showbiz parent thing.
But I mean, did you make her do stuff when she was like 5?
No, there's a true story, okay. Because showbiz parents to me are an abomination.
You are one.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But not really. It's like I'm a Jew. I didn't try to be one. It just happened.
Okay.
And which, by the way, you know, I was going to bring a beer over here because I know you allow no alcohol in your house.
Yeah.
And I just want, you know, but then again, I don't know if you remember this, a couple years ago, we'll get back to my daughter in a second. A couple years ago, remember you were having a Thanksgiving dinner and you have all these misfits, everything from nuclear scientists to street people. You know, you have a nice array and, you know, yeah. An interesting group of friends.
Sure, like, I do.
You know, magicians, hookers. It's great. It's like Al Goldstein, the old porno guy. So. I said to you, I said, I really can't come to your house unless I could bring wine. And you were so magnanimous and go, you know what? You and maybe Lou Reed are the only people I would ever let come into my house with wine.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, I stopped and I was going to get a beer, but, you know, I was just too tired. But just to annoy you and make you uncomfortable because you're so, you know, you're such a strong guy and so egocentric and so pompous. And I think a beer just might have thrown you off your game.
Perfect.
You know? Just a smell, knowing it's in your home. But then again, if you were a Jew, I'd take bacon. I'd rub it all over the walls and make you have an exorcism. If you said to me, Bobby, I've turned into a Jew, I would come over here with a ham sandwich and milk and just rub it
on. What are the chances of me turning into a Jew, Bobby?
Well, see, here's the thing with you, though. The fact that you don't like alcohol, you don't like tobacco, you don't like Jews. You know, if you didn't like pornography, you were one step away from being a Muslim. You were one step away from being a terrorist. You know that.
Except my love of bacon.
Oh,
I really love bacon.
Okay.
Well, I'm a bacon. Look at me. I'm a bacon loving guy. You're skinny. You know, you could be a bacon hating guy.
No. I eat probably more than you do, and I drink a ton of alcohol. I just have the metabolism of like a hummingbird. Yeah. I mean, look at me. Just for 4 hours, I'm bouncing off the walls. And this without the blow. If I did coke now, only dogs could hear me. I'd be talking so fast. But
do dogs understand English very quickly?
No, but you know what I like about your partner? He's a lot like Teller. You get people that just don't talk. Now, you know what your problem was? Your
I
wife.
She stay out of
something.
My way.
If you had a wife that didn't talk, you'd have the perfect. The...
You want to get to your daughter's
room? Yes, let's get back to that. Why don't I throw you off? That's how good he is. So when my daughter was 2 or 3 years old, you know, she was just one of these little Shirley Temple kind of. And I said, you know, what the hell? You know what? She might make some money for college. We'll take her to an audition. And they loved her. So Coca-Cola, she's just 2 or 3. We bring her back again. She goes, Daddy, I don't want to do this. Over. Done. That was the end of that. Uh-huh. I thought, what the hell? I can't afford college, you know, with what I'm doing. I'm a comic. I can't pull rabbits out of my butt and do what you guys do. Okay, I don't have a partner to help me. But here's the thing. So 7, 8 years later, I'm on the Tom Arnold show when Tom had a show in the WB.
Braggart.
What?
No.
Yeah, I know. I like to drop names. And Tom and Ed McMahon. Okay? You think you know people. I know people, Pat. So she would come to the set every week, go, Daddy, I have to try this again. I got to do this. So I think, okay, you know what? I'll get her an agent. A good friend of mine's a top child agent. And they said, look, Bobby, your kid's really good. Give it a shot. And I figure after 2 weeks, she'll get out of her system. A week later, she's got an animated series. And a week after that.
I mean, she's just doing the voice.
Animated series, 15 episodes. But a week after that, she gets a series on ABC. The week she gets her show, our show, the Tom Arnold show, gets canceled. Her show goes on the same studio, in the same spot, the Coach Studio at Universal. Now, where I was a bit player, I had a trailer along with the cleaning women in the parking lot. It didn't even have a bathroom. She's got a parking space, a driver, and then I run into comedians and actors. Hey, Bobby, what are you doing? Are you working on something? I go, no, I'm just watching my kid. But I'll tell you one of the greatest things, and you never would appreciate this, but now that you have a child,
I do.
You'll appreciate this, okay? Because you probably hated kids until you had one, didn't you?
Yeah, of course.
Hated kids, didn't want a kid. I still hate kids. And you probably still do.
I also don't like other people's kids.
Well, that's the thing.
You know, when we have like play dates
absolutely.
You want to hold the other kids?
No.
It feels like feels so wrong touch another baby.
Not only is it wrong, but they can sue you now. If they make up something like Roseanne that you did something, there goes your whole house and your career.
Don't ever touch another baby.
Not only don't touch them, but here's the thing. Kids ruin everything, whether it's hotel swimming pools, restaurants, Disneyland, movie theaters, supermarkets. And then people don't understand when you go, well, you have a kid. Yeah, but again, I have a Monday, Wednesday, Friday's kid day, Sunday afternoon, later in the day. Split it up. And never the twain shall meet. But I don't like children. But here's the thing, getting back to what I was saying. You will find that you start liking stuff that you would like. It does open different doors. Like, for example, when my daughter was on that TV show, every Friday before she taped the show, they did a dress rehearsal and had dinner. They had an hour break before they taped the show. And at Universal Studios, my daughter and I, the tours were shut down. We would walk to the Psycho House and we'd sit on the steps and go over lines and have ice cream. And I'd say to her, look, you don't really appreciate this now. She'd say, yes, I get it, because you've already seen Psycho. I go, this is just one of those great moments for the rest of your life that you and I sat on the Psycho steps behind the Bates Motel. And we walked through the Frankenstein set, which is still there from 1931, you know, Little Transylvania, which was done on all the Universal horror movies. And she appreciated how cool it was because I turned her on to great horror movies. Uh-huh. Abracadabra meets Frankenstein. My kids saw it 3 or 4. And so I started, you know, making her watch more horror movies, and you see what sticks, you know?
How do you think you are as a dad? Are you a good dad?
Perfect. I mean, no, nobody's perfect. You got to do what you can. But if you remember your parents and how much they never turned you on to anything, I'm not saying your parents specifically, but my parents never took me to see the Stones or took me to see Elvis or, you know, turned me on to porno. Like, I don't do that. No, I'm sorry. That's your thing. But I know when my daughter was 8 or 9 years old, I'm taking her to school and we're listening to like the oldie station in L.A. And she goes, Daddy, is that Ronnie Spector or Darlene Love? And I go, you know what I mean? That means more to me than if she could do a goddamn proof or know anything about trigonometry. So it's important.
How'd she do in school?
She's straight A's.
Straight A's?
She's homeschooled, too.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Talk about that.
It's the only thing in my life that's really ever worked out, I swear to God. I mean, my career, I'm making a living, and my marriage, it's hanging in by, you know, things are fine. I'm 50, I'm not blood, but everything is okay, considering most of the people walking along the strip. That's why I love coming to Vegas, because I like to look at these people and go, thank God, I'm not you. I thought my life sucked. And look at you fat bastards and your fat, horrible, ugly wives with the fanny packs and your matching T-shirts and your flip-flops.
So, whoa. I love matching T-shirts. I love couples who dress alike. It's my favorite thing about the Japanese people.
But do you and your wife do it?
I've tried with every girlfriend I've had, and it's always been a disaster. Because first of all, no one recognizes it. Because I'm always 3 times the size. So you don't recognize it. But my wife, Emily, says that she will dress like me and have the kids dress like me, which nothing can make me happy.
Well, that would be pretty funny. If the whole family dressed alike, then you'd look like the Dave Clark Five or something. You know, with the skinny ties and Beatles with the matching. No, that would be pretty cool, but because then it really looks like you planned it out and gave it some thought. If the whole family looks like you, it looks like, you know, you have one of these cults and you're raising this.
That's what I'm planning on doing. That's what I want to hear about the homeschool.
Oh, yeah. God. As a matter of fact, I got a great story for you.
Yeah,
by the way, our guest is Bobby Slayton, one of the greatest comics ever. BobbySlayton.com. You can buy all his, actually, I have nothing but a CD for sale, but. Here's the thing, though.
And one of the stars, The Aristocrats. Make sure
we'll get to
that
in a second, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I'm a fellow aristocrat. We have something in common. much like the Friars and all these great, the Nazis, things that we're talking about, policemen, a special group, a very small, select group.
You're on the job.
Yes. I forgot what I was talking about.
You were talking about homeschooling your daughter and said you had a great story. Okay. We're dying to hear it.
Okay. No, no. When my daughter was little, you know, the public schools in L.A. are an abomination.
Yeah.
And we lived in the Marina, and it happened to be a decent school for not a lot of money. And we moved to Sherman Oaks out in the valley. And private schools are $15,000, $20,000. We're talking about college. And neither my wife or I, my wife has a store. I'm on the road all the time. Taking my daughter to school all the time was very inconvenient and very expensive. And my daughter, when she was an actress, had been homeschooled for 6 months, and it worked out fine. My wife was totally against it. And out of necessity, because we didn't have the money or the time to take her to school, my wife said, we'll give it a shot. And thank God it stuck, because my daughter, you know, she gets up whenever she wants, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, goes to bed when she wants. She gets up. She works out in our little gym. She does some schoolwork, calls her friends, works out a little bit more, does some more. She enjoys school, because it's not like us when we're kids. You have to do this, and you have to do this now. And to be part, you know.
So how do you decide on the curriculum?
It's basic curriculum. It's basic high school, junior high school curriculum. And it worked out fine.
And she has plenty of friends.
Because a lot of her friends she had before she was homeschooled, and a lot of her friends are actors and actresses, too, are really cool. They're not like the uptight, stuck up, let's, you know, wait in line at Studio 54 and do drugs. They're cool. So far, everything's worked out fine. And she's got an Asian boyfriend, so when they do have sex, I know it's not going to hurt. I swear to God. And here's the funny thing. He's Filipino and is a great driver. So there you go. I talk about stereotypes.
She's destroying your whole act.
Yeah,
she's
ripping
apart your act.
But some stereotypes are based on fact. Here's an Asian guy that can drive, and I'm sure there's black guys who hate Escalades and don't like white women and hate the Foot Locker and fried chicken and watermelon. And I'm sure they're out there, too, okay?
You want to talk a little bit about the Jews?
I don't particularly like them either. I think Jewish women from New York, I know a lot of New Yorkers are listening. Look, I think Jewish women from Long Island are probably the major cause of homosexuality in America today. I mean, God bless Fran Drescher. If I had to come home to that, I'd be moving. I'd buy a condo on Brokeback Mountain tomorrow. How are you? Take a sweater. It can be cold. Cut that coupon. You're driving too fast. You're going the wrong way. In a second. Here I come. Wilbur, I'm there. Sorry. It's important for the next 2 years to do a Brokeback Mountain joke.
You have to.
I've learned that from Robin Williams.
It's a very important thing. Yeah. So you homeschool. Are you part of the homeschooling?
No,
I mean, you don't know anything.
Nothing.
Yeah, you don't know. Can you do algebra? Can you do trigonometry?
If I could do that, it wouldn't be a stand-up comic right now. I'd have a job.
I mean, do you know history? Do you know physics? Do you know chemistry?
I know.
What do you know, Bobby?
I know. I have a wonderful command of the English language, and I know a lot about history. I've helped to rewrite things that I think are, you know, a lot of things. But here's the thing. You can either teach the child.
Did you teach her to finish sentences?
No. I figure when there's not, it's sometimes not important to finish a sentence. I want to do more important things. She does it by herself. She has a tutor come in once in a while for science and physics experiments, because that was really tough stuff. And a lot of the stuff, she has a question. She goes online, talks to a teacher, and occasionally asks me about, you know, Independence Day or the Industrial Revolution or, you know, the War of 1812. And I just say, Arabs, all their fault. Arabs. War of 1812, Arabs. Franco-American War, Arabs. Spanish-American War, Arabs. Arabs. World War II, Arabs. What, those are Nazis? Arabs. Talk to the French. You talk to the Arabs. So now she knows that Arabs are the cause of all evil in this world today.
And you...
By the way, wait. Can I get one more?
Sure, I'm sorry.
Now you know how Teller feels. Just to get back a little bit of his own medicine. And by the way, if there's Arabs listening, I'm not saying you're all bad people, because you can't judge your book by 800 million bad apples. I'm sure there's some lovely Arabs. I kill you.
You were going to finish that thought.
No, I'm just saying that Arabs are, I don't know.
Enough with the Arabs.
Enough.
Already.
Okay.
To put it in terms you understand.
Yes.
But I'm interested, what is the legality of homeschooling? Do you have to run through a lot of hoops and stuff?
No, it's very simple. Matter of fact, there's a school, and I have to give you all the information. There's a few of them, but the accredited one in L.A. that most people use, called Laurel Springs, and it's perfectly accredited. And it's fine. It's great. It's very easy if you can stay on top of your kid. Now, a girl, I think, is easier. I don't know about you, but we're pretty smart guys. And how did you do in high school? Did you do well?
I got out of high school on a plea bargain. I didn't actually finish high school.
Okay.
My SATs were high enough that I told the principal that if he didn't graduate me, that I would cause him trouble with the school board. So I didn't go to school my last year of school.
See, what's really great, and it's not great, I have very mixed blessings about this, don't take this the wrong way, but if every cloud is a silver lining, the thing about kids shooting teachers now. Not that I ever would have done it. But when I was in high school, I was suspended many times for smoking cigarettes, smoking dope, talking back. And if the teachers, they all thought I was nuts. So at least in the back of the head, if they knew I might come back with an M16, not that I ever would, they might let me finish the day. You know what I mean? And now you have that hot teacher sex with the women. Yeah. If I knew that maybe these hot women teachers would maybe do me, maybe it would have given me incentive to stay in school. The idea of the teachers, the male teachers thinking I would kill them, and the female teachers possibly having sex with me, would have worked out for us. It would have worked out both ways.
Would you have preferred to have been homeschooled?
No, because I never would have finished. I mean, I was an abominable student. I mean, I was awful. And like I said, most boys I know, you probably wouldn't have been able to get through it. And I wouldn't have been. Now, more, I don't know about you, but I remember when I was evaluated with my IQ, it was not genius like you, but it was on the, it was quite high. So my parents used to say to me, you know, if you were an idiot like your friends, Dallas is Andy Goldberg, I understand, but you're a genius. So that kind of worked against me because they knew I was really smart and just didn't give a rat's ass about school.
And did you go to college at all?
No.
Not a day?
I dabbled twice. I dabbled in community college. I said, this is stupid. I moved to Florida to live with my grandmother, who was in bed by 8 o'clock and had smoked Open Arch Little Rascals till 2 a.m. That worked for 6 months. I said, you know what? This is going to suck. So I moved up from New York and I went to L.A. I said, this sucks. Moved to San Francisco and met you in a gay bathhouse, and we became friends.
Exactly.
It was so close, to being Penn and Bobby. But I talked too much, and he wanted to be Siegfried. I didn't want to be Roy, and there was a problem.
There's no one that's ever said you talk too much, Bobby. No one's ever said that.
I've never heard that.
No.
Too fast, too much.
Never heard that at all. Talk about your daughter's movie. All I want to talk about is your daughter's splendid career.
Well,
are you living vicariously through her? Are you going to be like one of those people that, you know, like what is it, King Ad-Rock's father, who was a playwright, but now, you know, the Beastie Boys get more famous?
No, I look at more like where the Barrymores, except we become more famous in our 60s, like Lionel, instead of making it like Drew. I think another 5-10 years, I'm going to be at a big start of a billboard on the boulevard like you, and then by the time she's 40 or 50, she'll get the parts that Laura McCall can't do because she's dead.
But you have a perfect relationship with your daughter, right?
You know what? As good of a relationship as you can have with a woman and a teenager. And you will see, you know what I mean? You'll see. I mean, I'm sure you and your wife get along fine, but why you think, after looking at all your friends and your past relationships and everybody you know, that things are going to work out for you and your wife? Because eventually they won't. And I'm sure you have a prenuptial agreement. And I'm sure, I mean, I wanted to get, you know, when I, pretty funny, I make myself laugh. When I got married, how long have you been married?
I've been married almost 2 years.
Yeah. I've been married 18. With the Winchell factor, it's like 100. Okay? And my wife and I, when I got married, I wanted a prenuptial agreement. She says to me, well, you don't have anything. And I really didn't. I said, I have my 54 Chevy. She goes, well, you can have that. I certainly don't want that. She goes, I'd be happy to sign anything. And I got rid of it. I didn't want it. But I didn't realize at the time. See, I thought when you get married, you can make a woman sign something, so if you ever get stuff, she can't have any of it. But, of course, it doesn't work that way. I didn't know that at the time. Well, if I did, I thought maybe she'd fall from my, you know, BS. And,
your wife is an actress, too.
Yeah, she acts like a... Yeah, we already went through that. I can't say it on the radio.
What have you... what has she done?
She hasn't actually done anything.
She also has a store?
Yeah, she's got a store. She's in the clothing business. You don't even want to talk about me and my career.
Not at all.
Okay.
I know all about you and your career. I'm interested in the other people around you who have careers.
Well, yeah, I know all the people around me who've died and left. And by the way, if you want to know anything about me, BobbySlayton.com. Let's talk about something.
BobbySlayton.com. We're going to be back after this with more Bobby Slayton. More Bobby Slayton right after this on Free FM. Ben Gillette on Free FM with Mike Goudeau about turning back over to Bobby Slayton.
That was the longest break I've ever had. By the way, what does Mike do on the show? I mean, I'm sure he does something, but
I write down the numbers.
Right. You just write down numbers if people want to call. We're not taking calls this segment. Because
not taking calls.
No, it's my fault because Penn said, should we take calls? And I said, you know what? We have so much to talk about. And what do people – you see, you know why I hate taking calls? Because basically people are going to go, either they like you or they hate you. And if they like me, I don't want to hear that. If they hate you, I'm riled up enough. If you hate me, go to BobbySlayton.com and tell me.
So what are the what's the latest thing you've been doing in your career?
I'll tell you in a second, but earlier you mentioned that. So I got to tell you about this movie. Okay. So my daughter does this movie called Me and You and Everyone We Know.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Last year at Sundance, it got this, I mean, really rave reviews. It's one of these independent, quirky, I mean, really bizarre films. I think you'd like it. My mother, my father, and all my mother's friends, you let your daughter do that? I don't get it. It's one of the movies where, you know, they need a whole story. They remember all these, you know, Casablanca, I love you, you lose a girl, get the girl, you know, yeah. Or Monster Kills Girls, Car Chase, you know, all that kind of stuff. Okay. That's my stuff. But anyway, so in the movie, it's just a slice of life. It's not John Hawks from Deadwood's in it. It's a great little cast. Anyway, so I went to the premiere, and there's a scene when my daughter and another little girl, and we have to keep this clean for radio, are servicing a young man for the first time in his life. And as a father, and you will see, it's a very uncomfortable thing to think about or look at or whatever. And both my wife and daughter said to me, she's not really doing anything. My wife says to me, she's an actress. She's simulating sex. And I said, well, if anybody could teach her that, it's her mother. Because she got the best acting coach that's ever lived. I'll tell you that right now. And you're married now. I'm sure you understand what I'm talking about. Which, by the way, speaking of that, so people always ask me, and if you're not going to ask me this, I'll ask myself, because I know you thought this. Why I'm so angry all the time?
Why are you so angry all the time? What gets you, set you off? I have a good life. You're an American.
Right.
You have a beautiful wife, a beautiful daughter.
Exactly.
What are you so angry about, Bobby Slayton?
Bobby, where do you get these jokes? And I know that was the next question.
Where do you get these jokes? I know that's the next question.
So I'm driving out here from L.A. It's a four-hour, five-hour drive. Like I said earlier, you know, there's traffic, and, you know, I get the road rage. I have a lot of time to sit in my car, listen to music, and think of stuff. Okay. So halfway here, and there's a story in the paper just recently. They've been covering this for the last month or so. You see what I did? I'm just a Saturday night. You know what I did.
Yeah,
okay. So I'm following the story, and I stopped to get coffee, and I'm reading the paper. And there's a story about this cult in Arizona, in Colorado City. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's one of those religious cults, like the David Koresh, remember him?
Where
basically, you know, they believe in Jesus and they're religious people. Now, you and I are not religious people. As a matter of fact, I'd like to say we're pretty much anti-religion. I might not hate it as much as you. There's not a religious bone in my body. If somebody wants to go to church once a week or temple or get bar mitzvah or confirmed or bar mitzvah or baptized, it ain't my thing. But if that's what makes you get through a day, fine. When you start wearing the religious clothing, whether it's a beanie or a tie or a burqa, you know what? That's when I draw the line. Because costumes are for Halloween, and if you're a superhero, you can't take it away. And if you're a religious superhero, I'm willing to bend the rules.
Sure.
Okay, I get it.
Yarmulke man.
Maybe. You're yarmulke man, you're super Jew, whatever. Fine. Anyway, so I'm reading this story, and one of this cult is, you know, one of these polygamous sects where this guy has many wives, okay, and believes in God, and so the head of the sect has 12 wives and 75 children.
Yeah.
Now, 12 wives and 75. And I'm sitting there trying to eat my breakfast. And I'm sitting thinking, is this funny? Is this pathetic? Is this frightening? 12 wives and 75 children. Now, that means right there, 87 birthdays. Now, add anniversaries to that, add Christmas, add Valentine's Day. There are basically every 3 days, you got to be buying something for somebody. Not only that. I mean, you think about 12 wives and 75 children. Even Mexicans are going, 12 wives? No. 75 kids, I see, but what kind of crazy? Any guy, 12 wives. That means every night you go to bed, banging your head against the wall, going, that's 12 times the amount I'm not getting. And the frustration. You have to believe in God. And to paraphrase, you know, there's got to be a heaven, because if this is not hell right now with 12 wives and 75 kids, I don't know what could be anyway.
But this is the problem I always have with religious cults. I am not religious. I always think they're nuts.
Right.
But I also don't want the government intervening. So when, you know, it's that great George Carlin line when he said, you know, Christians and the government shooting at each other, I'm okay with that.
Right.
You know, I mean, do you think the government should be able to stop him from having 12 wives?
No, if you want to do that, I mean, to me, 2 wives. I mean, 12 wives. You got to remember something. There's not a woman, and I know. I mean, you know, screw Dr. Phil and Tony Robbins. I'm like the best motivational speaker of all time.
Well, I agree with that.
You know. I mean, you could throw a rabbit in a shredder and make him come back to life. I can't do that. But as far as giving advice, I know what I'm talking about.
Give advice.
Okay. Here's the thing. I've never met a woman, and I've never read anything to the contrary, talked to any guy that doesn't lead me to believe that any woman, as wonderful as she is not out of her mind at least a couple hours out of the day. Now, you got 12 wives. That's 24/7. You're getting your chops busted. Never mind the kids. I don't, you know, to me, see, now I got a menopausal wife, and your wife hasn't hit menopause yet, but I got a teenage daughter and a menopausal wife. So every week, one's getting breasts, one's getting whiskers. My life is over. This is just one wife and one daughter, Pen. I'm afraid to open up the bedroom door and peel back the covers and see what kind of monster is emerging from the depths of hell today. Because it doesn't stop. And I'm getting zits, my butt's getting big, and I'm getting cellulite, I'm getting stretch marks. They don't stop changing and metamorphosizing into something more evil. And I got to deal with this crap. Then they have the nerve to say to us, you're not the same man I married. I haven't changed since I met you. I have not changed. I don't see you changing. maybe your knees are a little weaker.
You haven't changed.
No.
One tiny
No,
bit.
I haven't.
I met you in like 78, right?
No,
and there is absolutely no difference between you then.
I'm a little older. The hair's a little grayer.
Well, no, but essential difference. There's no difference in your personality.
I don't think most guys. You know, I eat pizza. I watch Batman. Where have I changed? what has changed?
But your wife has changed.
She's brutal. I mean, she's great, as wives go. You don't know what you're in for. You think, okay, let me tell you something right now. You think when your wife, it's that time of the month, and they might get a little nuts, wait till they're menopausal. If she's nice 5 days out of the month, you're lucky. These are the good old days. Enjoy them while you can. That's all I'm telling you.
That's all you're telling
me. Yeah, honey, I'm trying to make it. This is not a jackhammer. It's a okay, it's a radio.
So you were your daughter's in this great movie.
Yeah.
And you said you were a proud father about the movie, but made a little bit uncomfortable by the simulated
sex. Well, yeah, you know, but here's a funny
thing. Now, do you talk to your daughter about sex at all?
There's no reason to talk to her about sex.
Right.
What I did was, when she was little, I explained it to her. I showed her films about VD. I showed her that if she goes near boys, what's going to happen? And then, you know, here's a problem. Here's a problem I did after she was a teenager. You know, I know you were never a big druggie, but in high school, I went to Woodstock. I smoked a lot of dope. I took LSD. So to tell your kids not to do drugs, even though you did them, you know, it's kind of...
Yeah, how did you do that? How did you do that? Because there isn't a drug you didn't take, is
it? I said, look at me. I said, no. Do you want to be like me? I made Keith Richards look like you know, Shirley Temple. No, I mean, I said to her, you know, you do what you want to do. I think pot is fine. It didn't help me, but whatever. But what I did tell her is don't have sex. And she goes... Well, you had sex to have me, didn't you? And I go, yeah. And look at me and mommy. We're always fighting. We got along fine till we had sex. If you want to go along with another human being, no sex. You want to have like us. No, don't do it.
And, so, but your daughter's now 18, so presumably she has had
sex. Well, she could be 18 this summer. I realize if she's Mexican, she'd be a great grandmother by now. So it could be worse.
And what drugs does she do?
She doesn't do anything.
You sure?
Yep. I mean, I'm positive. But she tells me everything. She has the drinks. Doesn't drink, doesn't drive and drink. Drinks and drive, but doesn't drive and drink. No, doesn't do that. It doesn't. Smoked a little pot once, gave her a headache. And, you know, so far, I like him saying, you know, everything's good. You know, when I start to complain sometimes, like, I just had an agency.
When did you start to complain? I met you in 78. You haven't stopped complaining.
I'm not complaining. I'm more, it's bitching. And I don't whine. I like to think I'm grumbling.
Okay.
I think there was grumbling and whining. I'm bitching. Yeah, I guess a little bit.
Complaining, you definitely complain.
But here's where there's a double standard in my home, okay? My daughter, I never let her see my act about a year ago. And
well, really, that long?
Well, she caught bits and pieces, but she always wanted to come to my show. She'd be in the back room, and she'd catch bits and pieces.
Well, you should explain to those who – and I know that anyone who is cultured should know Bobby Slayton's
most
act.
Most people don't, but okay.
But if some people don't know Bobby Slayton's act, they'd have a good time right now to go to BobbySlayton.com. Talk about what you talk about in your act. What are the subjects you deal with?
You know, I talk about the same subjects most comics talk about, but unlike Dane Cook, I'm not cute about it. Unlike Carrot Top, I don't have lasers. Unlike Carlos Mencia, I don't steal from other people. I write my own stuff. you know, I mean, it's almost like, you know, if you explain to somebody with magic, I mean, you guys are so original, but sometimes, you know, you just make things appear and disappear. It's like saying, well, that's what Siegfried and Roy do, but it's not the same thing. But I like to talk about stuff I don't say to get people upset. People think that I try to get people upset, that I go out of my way to upset people. But because I've tried to be clean and talk about canaries like Jerry Seinfeld, that just stuff doesn't make me laugh. It's funny. I love Jerry. I love Brian Regan. They're clean. I think they're wonderful entertainers. They're great guys. I don't talk about politics. I don't know anything about it. That's Bill Maher. That's Jon Stewart. I talk about things that I find funny, like the Asian guy on the road and the fact that my wife doesn't like, you know, all those. it's basically, if I can make 99% of the people laugh, maybe break up one couple, I feel I've accomplished something. On that stage. But my show is like a boot camp for relationships. You know, Pat, I can't tell you, you ever shut up? You shut up. Stop talking. Thank you. That partner of yours, he's getting on my nerves.
Yeah, you know, he's nervous.
What are you doing over there exactly now?
Writing down the numbers, man.
Well, I couldn't tell
you. You got another
this.
Minute and 30 seconds.
Tell her she should be doing this. Yeah, I mean, tell her there's other stuff to do.
He's already a partner. He's not talking. I'm sitting in a chair.
How often do you let your wife see the show?
She comes once in a while. Yeah, here's a funny thing.
How often do you let her talk?
10 years into meeting you.
Right.
You said your wife saw the show like once a year. So
what about with, you know what, it's like New Year's Eve when I have to spend time with her. I don't even take her to my shows anymore. But my daughter, getting back to her, 6 months ago, all her friends had seen me on on TV, and her friends from my office go, oh, my God, your dad's in Wayne's World. I was in the Rat Pack. We got to go see your dad. So I'm playing the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach in L.A., and my daughter goes, all my friends, about six of them, want to come see you. And I go, look, you know what? You know, I talk about your mother and porno and my daughter, and it's that time of the month and menopause, and I get racially, you know, there's the N-word and the C-word and this word. And my daughter goes, I don't care what you say as long as my friends are laughing.
So, what a perfect thing to say.
I went out of my way to get extra blue and extra disgusting. And she said, that was great. Now, if my show was brilliant and nobody, and my friends didn't laugh, and it was clean and nice and observational and witty, and I got a standing ovation, and my daughter's friends weren't laughing, she would have been pissed at me. Yeah. But that's a girl. That's a teenager. Now, my wife, on the other hand, you know, she's come to my shows where I've ripped her to shreds, and she'll go, you know, you're really kind of nice to me tonight. And there are other shows I back off, and I don't know. There's no rhyme or reason to what's going
now,
on there.
Is the stuff you're talking about, how close to real is it? You know, I've seen your show much more than I've spent time with you and your wife. How much of that are real problems, and how much of that is just shtickler?
Oh, still shtickler. Yeah, I know you knew any Yiddish. You do.
A little bit.
You see? A little bit of Jew and everybody.
I'm just trying to make you feel comfortable.
Hey, like, you know, what am I, Don Rickles? We're shtickler. Like, I'd say I embellish a tad. I'd say my wife's even come up with some of the jokes about her.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's very funny that she's actually said things to me. Most of it's not funny, but some of it is actually quite witty. You know, and you know, what, we have to take a break?
Yeah, we're going to take a break, then we'll come right back.
Oh, we'll come right back.
I'm BobbySlayton.com. This is Penn Jillette on Free FM with Michael Goudeau, who's really taking the day off today. That's me playing bass, you know, Bobby.
Is that you?
I'm playing the upright there, yeah.
I know
this is Bobby Slayton here, BobbySlayton.com. Whenever anyone asks me my favorite comics, I always say Gilbert Gottfried. I always say Bobby Slayton. And then the list, you know, kind of goes to the people that are in the Aristocrats. But you always kill me.
You know, the Aristocrats, it's pretty funny. You know, I still talk about that movie a lot. You know, when you guys called me up a few years ago.
You were the first person we shot for.
Did you really?
The first person.
Well, what's really interesting is that when you told me to do the joke and I told it, as quickly and as fluently and as I could. And I didn't know at the time, but were you using that as so other guys could go off on tangents like Gilbert? I mean, did you want guys like me just to tell the joke so people could see what the joke actually was if it was told in 30 seconds? Like
We wanted to get some people that we thought would do a pure telling like you and Overton and people like that to let other people do more embellishing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you usually get onto a joke and get off it.
Well, that's the way joke's supposed to be told. I mean, if you're going to drag a joke out, that's something women do. So the guy, like, he's wearing a yellow shirt and like, wait. So his car, wait, let me start again. No, but this joke was made for improvisation. But what's really funny about the Aristocrats, when he said, I think Paul Provenza called me up and said, you know, we're going to have all these comics tell the joke, the Aristocrats. And to be honest with you, I had never thought I heard the joke. Uh-huh. And when Paul told me, he goes, yeah, you know what, I heard that years ago, I guess. But then when all this press came out, now I don't know who started this, but it was like this joke that comedians get together in back rooms and after hours to tell. And I go, well, and I asked a lot of guys in the movie. And they said they've never done that.
Yeah.
I think Paul Reiser in the movie said that he had done that with a bunch of guys. But I asked a whole bunch of comics. I said, well, maybe
It was a little piece of minutia that Provenza and I were obsessed with. I mean, there's an article about Milton Berle's writer's room in the New Yorker in the early 60s where they mention it. It's mentioned throughout, I mean, Jay Marshall, who did Ed Sullivan a zillion times.
Right.
He talked about hearing it when he was 20, which would be in the 30s, you know. So really, you're as young as you can possibly be and have had part of that at all.
Oh,
it really has died out completely.
Oh, so
but Provenza and I got obsessed with it, just like, you know, the guy, Frenchman, get obsessed with penguins, you know.
Right.
It was just this little bit of minutia that no one else cares about that we just cared about.
So was it more of like the 50s, the Catskills and Vegas, those guys would get together and tell the joke?
It wasn't getting together to tell the joke. What it really was, and we don't make this that clear because it doesn't serve our purposes, but it was kind of like if you were back with a lot of comics and some civilian came in, you know, preferably a woman, preferably someone who was really not with it in any way, and said, why don't you tell me a joke?
Oh,
you would say, okay, Bobby, tell her the joke.
Okay, so was it the PR person from the film? Was it you guys? Or was it just by luck that every review I read, and there were dozens of them, that there's a secret society of the comedians? They made it just seem like comics told the joke all the time, which I think was a tremendous, the biggest selling point of the film.
Well, the movie has that feeling because especially people like Reiser, who are obsessed with it, and Gilbert and so on, those are the people we really leaned on. But it's also the hook of the movie. And when people would ask me, is there a secret society of comics, I would always answer no.
Right.
But well, we always quoted, when they would talk about movies made about comedians, Provenza quoted you in every single interview when you came out of, what was the movie that was about stand-up comedy, and you came out and went, Provenza, they have lockers.
Oh,
you remember that?
Oh, it was that movie Punchline with Tom Hanks and Sally Field.
Yeah, exactly.
And I went to go to the premiere. Was he there? I don't know. No, I came in. But
you called him up.
Yeah, really?
He said he got a phone call from you. They would always ask us about what other movies really show stand-up comedy. Right. And he said, well, the movie Punchline came out. I was sitting at home doing nothing.
Right.
The phone rang. Bobby Slayton said, I saw Punchline. They have lockers. And he hung up.
Well, as everybody knows, I've never been to a comedy club. Most comedy clubs have lockers, but they're for the waitresses to put their sneakers in and to change their clothes. I've never had a locker. Oh, my fake nose. I got my secret belt. I'm going to keep all my stuff here. In my locker with my name on it. Like Shaquille O'Neal. I got my little jersey with my name. It's great. My locker. My little brag about me and my lunch, just like school. But well, you know what? The Aristocrats, what the best thing about that movie, the greatest review I read for me, Ken Tucker in New York Magazine.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you probably read a lot of these, but Ken Tucker reviewed the film, a very favorable review. He used to write for Entertainment Weekly, and he mentioned a few comics. I won't mention their names now, but he goes, well, actually, what he said was, he mentioned a couple of guys and said, this movie shows you what an awful comic this guy is, what an awful comic that guy is, what a nice guy and personable guy Drew Carey is, even though you wouldn't think he's this good and talented, and how Bobby Slayton should have been a much bigger star than he is. And then, in parentheses, he goes, never heard of him? That's my point. Now, I'm very upset by it. I mean, I'm thinking this is nice that he's going, Bobby Slayton should be a big star. My wife's going, isn't this great? I'm going, well, yeah, not that he did it in a backhanded way, but it's a little depressing that all of a sudden he's saying Bobby Slayton should be a big star, but he isn't. So it felt good in one hand, but on the other hand.
Well, one of the points of the movie, and it's very clear in the movie, was we didn't have any studio behind us or any money behind us. And it was very important to us that we did not let anybody say to us, can you put in more Robin Williams? Can there be more?
Right.
And we tried to make it so that the emphasis was on who was funny and how they were funny and not who was the most famous, which is the only movie that's ever done.
Now,
that.
Did you make a lot of money off this movie?
No.
Because I didn't think you would have made a lot of money off the movie.
No. Because once you get into the system,
right.
You know, we did very well. We sold it, and I, you know, I'd put up a few hundred thousand dollars.
No, absolutely.
And then we made a little bit back.
Right,
but once it gets into the system, the expenses that the studio has are just insane.
No, I know.
It looks on paper like it made $25 million, but that really comes down to 30 cents. Let me show you the bookkeeping.
No, but the studio made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And when it comes out,
sure.
But, you know, here's what's funny. First of all, because a lot of comedians said to me, oh, God, movie costs nothing to make. I bet you Peng Gillette and Paul Provenza made a fortune. I go, first of all, I don't think they did. And even if they did, I'm in the movie for 30 seconds. If you would have made a fortune on it, I don't think that when you made it, you were expecting it to become...
Well, no. When I first started making it, I was with Provenza.
Right.
I was working with Paul Provenza. Right. So I called my business manager and said, I'm going to make a movie with Paul Provenza. It will cost me. I'll try to keep it less than $100,000 that I will lose.
Right.
And he said, well, where's it going to come out? I said, it will never come out. We're making a movie that's a home movie for our friends, and it'll be laughed at on DVD by buddies of ours for years to come.
Right.
That's all we're doing.
Well,
and then it turned out that more people liked it. But it still is a little cultish thing.
You know, it's so funny because most people I met liked the movie. Of course, some people, of course, hated it.
Well, yeah.
You know, almost every comedian I know loved it. And most people who show me, because you know all the people and you appreciate what they did in the film.
Sure.
But, you know, when I first saw it, I actually, when you sent me a copy, I saw it. But I hadn't gone to the movie. You guys invited me to screenings. I'm always working. I'm playing... When it was playing, whatever, it was six, 8 months ago, when it was in the theaters, or last year, whatever, there's a comedy club in Kansas City, the Funny Bone, the Improv. Uh-huh. And they're in a movie complex. There's like five movie theaters.
Uh-huh.
And then the club, which, you know, and they have a martini bar. It's a great little entertainment complex. Martini bar, five movie theaters. So one night, I'm catching bits and pieces between my show. And I haven't been able to see me. Because I walk in the beginning, I walk in the middle, the three shows on Saturday night. So And it was a beautiful movie theater. It's a Saturday night, and I finally walk in there, and it's packed. And I walk in, and people are laughing. Most people in Kansas City are silent. The guys are laughing. You know, women are appalled. And all of a sudden, I come on, and I stand up in the theater and go, "That guy's the best! That guy made the movie! That's what it's all about!" And I walked out. And I'm just thinking, these people must have thought, "Why, wait, that's the guy." I mean, it's Kansas City. In L.A., probably be no big deal. But it's like Purple Rose of Cairo. Like, did he walk off the screen? What? How did that happen?
You know, that brings to mind, we went to, and there's no reason to remember this, but it's my favorite story of our conversation. We went to see a movie together in San Francisco in 78, and you had just read the newspaper, and someone had run into Texas Chainsaw Massacre while the movie was playing, and run into the movie with a chainsaw, screaming with a chainsaw during the showing of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And you said to me, "Can you imagine how much that would scare you? Imagine how much that would freak you out." I said, "It's not the movie. It's the chainsaw itself. Right. It has nothing to do. They could run into Love Story. They could run into Brokeback Mountain, a guy with a chainsaw." Same thing there. Bobby Slayton starts screaming in the movie. It doesn't matter that you were just on the screen.
But if I would have had a chainsaw, how great would that have been?
That would have been fabulous. That would have been,
wait, he's the guy from the movie with a chainsaw.
With a chainsaw.
That would have made people think, That would have been great.
Then we would have all made money, a ton of money.
Absolutely.
So, do you have any movies coming up? Any TV shows?
I just did something that was really kind of cool in my big illustrious career. You know that Broadway play Dreamgirls. You heard about that?
Yes.
It was based on all this like Motown and the R&B and Jackie Wilson and Berry Gordy and all that '60s Supremes and all that. And they just did a movie, and it's Jamie Foxx and Eddie Murphy, Beyonce, Danny Glover. And I play the white guy. I'm only in the movie for one scene, but how great is this? The character was a balding Jewish 1960s insult comedian. I wonder who that could have been. Hey, lady, what is that, a fur? Hey, is that your husband? What is he, Puerto Rican? So I get to bring on Eddie Murphy in the film. How cool is this? You know, Jamie Foxx, one scene, but it's kind of cool. Jamie Foxx plays, like I said, this kind of... kind of like a Jackie Wilson, kind of James Brown type character, and actually a pretty good singer. I get to bring him on as the first Negro act to work Miami Beach. And I'll tell you, folks, these people are great. They can sing, they can dance, they come up hype after. You can't find help like that today. You don't get to really say a lot of stuff like that very much anymore.
And this isn't a movie coming out soon?
Yeah.
So you get to be, you're really playing Bobby Slayton.
Yeah, so now I'm going to get my butt kicked not only by the homosexuals and the Asians, but now the black people will be after me too. And the Jews. Everybody says.
And as the Jews say, why is today different from any other?
Why is that?
I mean, don't you get your butt kicked by those groups all the time, Bob?
I get Jewish women coming up to me, "Why do you have to make fun of us? We don't all sound like that. Why is that not money?" And I go, "Well, yeah, whatever."
And still touring? Did you still like doing the comedy clubs?
No.
Did you ever like it?
Yeah, for a long time. I mean, yeah, you still like doing what you do? I mean, you love it?
Yeah, I love it.
You do love it?
Just love it, yeah.
Every night?
Yeah.
I mean, you do.
Yeah.
But isn't it a special thrill when you get to try? How often do you try a new, I know, what is it called, gags, a new trick? What? How often do you?
Trick is good. We put in a new stuff every couple, 3 months.
Now, what about something that's really big? And, I mean, of course you rehearse it. But do you ever try to? Do you ever do it like in front of?
We always do it. We always do it before we're supposed to. We're always speeding stuff in. And I'm gonna look at the clock on the wall there.
Yep, we have to go.
We're almost done with Bobby Slayton. BobbySlayton.com.
You know what?
I see him. One of the funniest people I've ever seen.
Great. It's 150 degrees outside. I have 3 cases of wine in my car. I'm delivering to somebody. It's gonna be vinegar now.
Yeah, it's gonna be vinegar. Bobby
Thanks.
Slayton making vinegar out of wine.
Let
for
me know
over 30 years.
Let me know when I can do something else for you for no money. I'm here.
Okay. Thanks.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.